Welcome to the Lavo Show podcast. Conversations with outstanding human beings whose love has been inspired and transformed by Osho. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Enjoy the show.
Hello and thanks for tuning in. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Wittmann. Wittmann took sannyas in 1978. And in 1986, he was entrusted by Osho, the School for Life and Death Processes, later known as the Institute for Living and Dying. I'm so happy to have Wittmann on the show, and I hope you enjoyed. Wittmann, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you, Swaram. I'm very good. I'm enjoying the view from my office into nature and the blue sky. And most of all, I'm very glad to meet you in this way.
Likewise, very excited to be speaking with you. So to start, Wittmann, tell us a bit about you and how you came across Osho.
Okay, about 1 year before I met finally Osho, I had an experience which we would call as Satori experience, which lasted almost 2 days in Africa at the ocean. And when it was over, I decided if this is possible, then I need to find this. Wherever this unity, this deep, absolute joy and fearlessness came from. So I looked around and I started practicing yoga immediately. And after 1 year, my girlfriend and me, we started traveling to India. And there we met some sannyasins who gave us a book of Osho. This happened actually in Dharamsala, where the Dalai Lama was in his exile. And when we read this book, immediately we traveled to Pune.
I'd love to hear your first meeting with Osho.
Okay, this was my initiation, my sannyas darshan. I don't remember much what he said. I just remember that for the first time in my life, I felt deeply loved and seen by someone. This was my deepest impression. And then what I remember from the darshan is that he said, if I understood that ego always comes with misery and awareness always comes with joy and freedom, my journey would be over in one single step. And this, of course, made me very curious and gave me a lot of courage to dive fully into it. But the deepest impression was somebody looking at me with eyes of complete love and acceptance.
Wonderful. And then from that moment, I believe you never left. Is that right?
Well, yeah. Osho has been my master since then, and it still is. Yeah. Of course, in the course of my spiritual journey, when Osho left the body, for some time I was very lost and didn't know how to go on. And then about 10 years ago, I met another living master, and he has become like a teacher for me, because I was very clear, if I want to go all the way on this journey, I need some more help or support or clarity. But also still the roots is still my deepest beloved master.
Is there a short story about you and Osho during the time you were living in Pune in the commune that you would like to share with us?
Well, nothing comes to mind that is so outstanding. I felt like a very simple person being part of the commune and meditating and working a lot, very intense on myself. And I always felt supported by Osho also in energy darshan, which helped me to go beyond the mind and really let go. But there's nothing outstanding really that happened. Like I had no personal meeting with him, which was not possible anyway.
You mentioned that you had some darshans with Osho. Were they private darshan, directly answering your questions? Is there any questions that was really significant for you that you still remember that made a difference in your path?
No, in that time we could not ask questions. We could just come up and sit in front of him and receive an energy darshan, or when we left or when we came back to Pune, we could have a darshan, but we could not really ask questions. There was just a wordless exchange of energy, or maybe a question from Osho, how we are or whatever, but there was no question, no.
Okay, so let's jump into the main part of the show today, which is death. I understand that after Osho left his body, you had the great honor to facilitate the Bardo meditation process in Osho's house. And this is a meditation that you created based on the Tibetan Book of the Dead. Can you tell us a bit more about this meditation?
Yeah, it's based on the deep wisdom of the Tibetans who have explored this issue more than any other culture or religion. And it's simply a guidance for the soul or the consciousness of the person to go through this transition of that we call death very consciously, and not to lose your way, which is possible, but go to remember all the teachings that you have received in your life from a teacher or a lama, to remember all these teachings while you go through the transition. And then it's very likely that you will kind of enter into the light of your own consciousness, which is not an outer light, but it's really your own inner light. And that's what the Tibetans are concerned with. Or you will enter into a new life to complete your individual journey.
How does it work in practical terms, just to give us a little taste? I'm really curious and fascinated by this process. So how would you lead meditation like that?
Okay, I would speak with a person who is in the dying process about this many times, if they are open and interested. And then I would make them acquainted with meditation as such while they are still alive. And I will make with them quite shorter meditations, because the Bardo meditation takes many, many hours, and introduce them. And then I will usually give them the CDs to listen to if they want to. And as I say, listen to them as often as possible. And then when you die, you will remember it. Yeah. So, but I prepare them through small guided meditations and encourage them to ingest, to take in this guidance in the meditation. And I trust that the consciousness of that person will take it in as much as they can.
I would assume that you have seen a number of people dying. So what did you learn from seeing people dying? And did you notice any difference between meditators and non-meditators when they die?
Yeah, in many cases I see a difference with people who have meditated in their life, or with people who have a very deep spiritual or even, let's say, religious connection with something higher, like the existence or life or God, however you will call it, that those people go through the dying process with less struggle, less fear. And if there is fear and pain and struggle, these phases are much shorter, as if the consciousness of the person remembers again and again that they are not really separate from the whole. And when they die, they go back into this wholeness. I call it the ground of being. And this remembrance makes it more easy for people to relax when death comes, to trust that death is as natural as my life has been.
Okay, so you mentioned fear, and I've heard Osho saying that death is the greatest taboo together with sex. He says that sex is the beginning and death is the end, and they're not two polar opposites, rather they complement each other in a continuum of life and death. We know religions have been repressing both sex and death, but we know all about sexual repression, but we don't talk much about the fear of death. And I think the work you do is partly filling this gap. Why there is so much fear of dying in our society?
I think the deepest fear is the psychological fear, the fear that when we die, we are forced to let go of the whole notion that we have any control. In life, we can manage a certain amount of control, but usually we don't have much control in life if you really look deeply. So the fear is to lose control and to lose this idea of I am somebody, I am something. People are so afraid to not have this reference of I, of me, of being a person. And I think those are the deepest fears that prevent people even from thinking or looking into death and dying.
So what you're saying is that it's related to the ego and the fear of letting go. So we spend the whole life attached to our identity and strengthening our ego, and then when it comes the moment of dying, it's the last battle of the ego, doesn't want to let go. Is that what you just said?
Yeah, that's the essence.
If people meditate and are on a spiritual path and somehow during their life they start working on letting go of the ego, that probably will help them to die in a more fearless way. Is that in your experience, it's like this?
Yes. Yeah, it may not be completely without fear. This is quite a different thing. But they will certainly die with less struggle and probably also more with an inner openness. You know, a spiritual seeker learns to be open, not mentally, but more from the heart, from the whole being, to be open, to be courageous, and to explore, and not clinging to the beliefs that we have how things should be. And this helps certainly a dying person, whatever is their way, whatever is their religion or their spiritual path, to enter more relaxed into the dying process.
Okay, I understand. And of course, you know, the theme of death is certainly not a popular one. To decide to work and work on this theme for you. So what got you interested in the first instance to work with death?
I think the entry into this was when I had meditated for some time, and I have meditated very intensely when I came to be with Osho. If you really meditate, you come across a space where you feel, oh, if I go further now, if I let go even more, if I let go of control, then you actually feel it as a kind of, oh, there is fear. I have to, something in me is going to die. So this was my experience, and this made me very, very eager to learn and understand more. And this was very beautiful with Osho, because he's one of the very few masters who speak so openly and so deeply and courageously about this taboo issue. So this was my start, let's say, and then I had an experience of a person after I did my first Vipassana course in Pune in 1978. I came out of the course, and on that day somebody had died in the commune, and I went straight from the end of the group in a very open and receptive and sensitive way. And I watched this body burning. And this had such an incredible impact on me. I was crying for hours, and I understood I'm going to be there one day myself, and everything that I have struggled so much about will be totally inessential. And then I went home, and I lay down on my bed, and I was sick for, I think, 4 or 6 weeks. I could not get up anymore. My whole system needed time to digest this deep impact. So this was my first real encounter with death.
That reminds me of the Buddha story. One of the trigger for Buddha to leave his life and his kingdom and wife and child and go into a spiritual search was because he saw people who were sick, old, and death. He saw death, and that really was a very powerful. So, and I think I heard Osho saying that in the Buddhist tradition, they actually ask to look at people dying during cremation, during ceremonies, as a form of meditation.
There's also a meditation from Osho where he also encourages people to go to the burning ground and watch the bodies being burned. He said, at least once you should have this experience so that you can see it with your own eyes, and this will help you to go beyond the usual denial that we have, the denial of the mind that we don't want to look at this.
Normally people really, including me, I mean, always trying to avoid even the thoughts of death, whereas can be an incredibly powerful and transformative experience. And in fact, I have heard Osho saying that many people get enlightened at the time of death. Why is that?
I guess because when death comes very close, first of all, you're almost forced to be in the present moment. You have no escape anymore into thoughts of future and past. So this is one thing. And the other thing is that when you're so close to death and you have a little idea about what it means to be enlightened or to be awakened and not to be only the body and the mind, then the closeness of death is like a big wake-up call. Like every dying person that I have been with, I noticed the closer death came, the more they were asking for something that helps them to make sense of it all, or to even get out of this total suffering of the mind. So I guess the closeness of death can bring a person to, before they died, to shed the last remains of their ideas of separation, of ego. And this can be the transition into knowing who you are before you die.
And that's very inspirational for a meditator. You know, I got really inspired now because it can change the perspective of how we look at death. You know, if I meditating because, you know, I want to free myself from misery, from the mind, from the ego, and then instead of looking at death as something bad, as something that is the end, it's actually an opportunity, probably the greatest opportunity I will have in my lifetime to take the jump.
Yeah, for many people it is like this. And I think in life we still can postpone this jump into no mind. And I remember also, this is one of the deepest things he said in one series, I think, Take It Easy. He said, if you want to die consciously, you have to be almost enlightened, just on the border of enlightenment. And I think this is very true.
Okay, so I better start meditating more intensely because I'm a long way from being at the border of enlightenment.
Well, whatever you understand. Yeah.
Yes, I guess so. So you are an expert in the subject of death. You have been working with dying people and conscious dying for many, many years. And then obviously you studied the Tibetan tradition of Bardo. How do you understand Osho's death?
Let me first say I don't consider myself an expert. I have not died consciously in this life. My ego also has not completely died yet. So I consider myself always like a beginner. Yeah, I'm very aware that all my knowledge does not count much. So I will never introduce myself as an expert. I have just looked into this issue maybe a bit more deeply than others. Okay, Osho's death. The first thing that comes to mind is when he was lying, and I was present when he died. I was present in Buddha Hall. Yeah. The first thing that comes to mind is that when Amrita said that Osho has left the body, I turned to my girlfriend sitting next to me, and as inside I said to her, or maybe I even said directly to her, okay, Osho is still there inside us, but now we are on our own. We have to stand on our own feet. This was the first response that came, and of course I cried, I laughed, I danced, I sat at his fire the whole night watching the burning, and I was never much interested in all these stories, what happened, why Osho died, what happened really. I was never much interested. It was just a matter of fact to me, and it certainly gave me a big, big push into taking full responsibility for my own life. And in a way, for me, Osho was never so much like a person. Yeah? He was always more like a presence. And this presence did not change. I think it became even more real and intense and available after he left the body.
Yes, and definitely. I think it's the only way to explain why so many people, I mean, I'm a living example of someone who have never met Osho in the body, yet I feel his presence and I feel like I'm a disciple of Osho, I'm a devotee of Osho, and you know, I never met the man in the body, so it only could be explained by, as you say, presence or energy, or that Osho was a phenomenon much wider and beyond the physical form. So perhaps you already answer the next question I wanted to ask you. What have you learned from Osho that helps you in the work you do today with conscious dying?
When we talk about Osho's presence, it's just a matter of words, but I would always say he is, the presence is. I would not say he was, but this is just a small thing. What have I learned from Osho? The most important thing is to develop a silent inner awareness of everything that is happening, like a silent background, in which all thoughts and beliefs and objects and experience appear and disappear. So I'm talking about pure awareness here, the observer, not just the observer of thoughts and feelings and experiences, but the observer still deeper being aware of itself, of this background, that there's always a witnessing consciousness, without which we could not have any experience at all. So this is I think, the deepest thing I have learned from Osho. And he encourages us to live deeply, fully, courageously.
For me personally, this is something, it's been a long, long journey, and it still is. I'm still learning. But I remember when I started reading Osho, I could understand what he was saying intellectually when he said that the witness is beyond the mind, but it took me so many years of meditation to start to actually go a little bit deeper into that and actually experiencing that there is something beyond the mind, because, you know, I'm most of my life and most of the time I'm so identified with the mind. So it's beautiful that, you know, it's a reminder, because I've been thinking about this just lately. I was going to work in the underground MRT, how is it called here in Singapore, and I had this intuition, and I felt like that's why I'm meditating, you know, meditate to get to that understanding of the witnessing. And now you're saying this, reinforcing that I'm in on the right path. So thank you for that.
Great, yes.
So let me jump into something a little bit more scientific and modern. I'm very curious to hear about the science, what the science has to say about death. You know, we are seeing so much scientific discoveries and technological advances in the last few decades. So what is the science saying about death? Is there any scientists doing research on death? And what are, if you know, the most interesting findings in relation to meditation and the work you do on conscious dying?
This is a very challenging question. Yeah. What I notice is that science as such can only go as far as mind tries to understand death. Yeah? I have not seen a scientist who is really saying clearly that what is happening in death cannot be explained. Yeah? For me, it is a mystery, and it will always be. There will never be a deep scientific explanation of what happens. I know many people are working on it, and it's very valuable work, what happens in the brain. Yeah? But all the interpretations, for me, miss the point. The point that it is a mystery, and what death really is, we can only sense or get, not on the level of mind, but only on the level of awareness, of love. Yeah? They have something in common, awareness, deep consciousness, and love. That there's something which is beyond any words, any thoughts, any explanations. I would call it the mystery. So I hope that science continues, but I see there's still a great limitation.
I remember Osho saying that there are three dimensions. One is the known, what we already know. One is the unknown, that is the field of science, what we don't know now, but we will know tomorrow. And then there is a third dimension that nobody talks about, which is the unknowable, something that probably we will never be able to understand. And according to what you're saying, death belongs to that dimension that is beyond the mind, beyond science. But on the other side, it's interesting to see what happens in the brain. You know, I see all these latest experiments and discoveries about the studies they're doing on meditation and the Tibetan monks and what happens in the brain during deep state of meditation. It's just fascinating, but perhaps you will never be able to explain consciousness that way. We don't know.
Yeah, I'm glad that you speak about the third dimension of the unknowable. I would call it the mystery. Yeah? I know, for example, the Tibetans are working very hard on even bringing light into this. But, I mean, even to find words for this is almost impossible. Yeah? We have limitations on the level of words and definitions. I'm also very interested in all these scientific discoveries. And I have learned a lot about many things that they have discovered about what happens in the brain and the body and in the cells and in the nervous system of people when they die. And this helps me also in being with dying and preparing for my own death. So there is a great value in this.
Let's move on. And I'd like to ask you something about your experience transfer to young people and everyone else who will face death at some point or the other, because we will all have to deal with it. So once I read an article about a nurse who used to collect people's last words before dying. And she would ask them if they were happy and if there were any regrets. And all of them had a long list of regrets, unfortunately. So what would be your advice to young people and everyone else on how to live life to avoid misery and regrets at the time of death?
Okay. To young people, well, they certainly live in a different place in life. So I would always encourage them to find their true identity by living completely, whatever they have to live. So I would encourage them to live their life completely and to wait until it comes natural to them that they start thinking about other dimensions like death and who am I. Young people, I would certainly invite, live your life totally. Take enough time for you to really love deeply. That would be my most important message to them.
Hope many young people will listen to this podcast and take up on your advice. What are your current activities? What are you working on? What are your latest projects?
My latest projects, except the trainings and courses that I run together with my partner Suki, I spend a lot of time writing. So I have a new book in work about the relation between death and consciousness. And I'm always creating new CDs. I'm also thinking about creating a new version of the Bardo meditation, because this is almost more than 20 years old, the CDs I did. So I'm thinking about making a new version of this. These are my current projects. Yes.
Wow, you're very active and lots going on. So I'm very curious to hear more about your new meditation. Are you developing and creating a modern version of that ancient technique of Bardo? Is that what you're working at?
Yes, so the first Bardo CDs were already like a modern version, more into our Western understand, put into words of our Western understanding and psychology. Yeah. But now I feel there's many things are still they're obvious to Tibetan people who have grown up with a culture and the religious education. Yeah. But there's still many symbols and goddesses and deities and lights and sounds, and all these have to be translated into our contemporary understanding and our psychological understanding, so that this process, which is for me one of the most important things that one can look at in preparation for dying and also for living, to translate it more into our language and take out or translate this deep Tibetan understandings. For them, it's natural. They know what it means when we talk about lights and sounds and energies and wrathful deities and blissful deities. These have to be translated.
I absolutely love what you're doing, and I think it's really valuable and it's so needed. And because, yeah, we need to, unfortunately, in our modern secular world, people are not attracted by ancient spiritual traditions. So we need to keep the spirit, the essence, they're absolutely valuable, but also make them digestible and translate them into modern words. And that's why the scientific evidence can be very useful for that, because people trust science more than the Tibetan sage. So if you say that it's been scientifically proven that, you know, this and that will happen to your brain at the time of death, people will more likely to listen. So that's what is happening with meditation, for example, the way I understand it. So where people can find you if they want to know more about the work you're doing, if they want to be trained or attend one of the courses or find the CDs, any of the material that you have produced?
They can look up our website. For the English language, it's living-dying.com and bardo-meditation.com. And for the German speakings, it's leben-sterben.de. So these are the main channels through which you can find us.
Beautiful, and I'll link your website to the in the notes of the show. Okay, so we are heading towards the end of the podcast, and I have three final questions for you. The first is, what's your morning routine? How does your morning look like in the first couple of hours of your day?
Okay, I love this question. And I loved what Rashid had said about it. We are very similar in this way. I very often, more and more often, I wake up very early in the morning. And then what I do, I just sit silently. Sometimes I breathe in a very gentle way into my heart, because an open heart is very important and central for any spiritual evolution. And then later on, after my morning tea with my partner, we always sit together. We sit silently. That's our almost only technique that we're using after many years. And I also often do inquiry in the early morning or even in the middle of the night, like questions. How can I engage in this transition from the doing state into the being state, being and becoming? So this is my routine.
Okay, wonderful. So the second question is, what's your favorite meditation and why?
For the first 20 years, it has been Kundalini meditation, dynamic also, but more Kundalini, and then it changed towards another Brahma meditation, which is very healing for me. This is one meditation I sometimes still practice because it's healing and it works on the subtle bodies. But essentially, I sit silently and I find more and more indications where Osho talks about the value of just being silent, sitting silent.
Okay, so the last question is, you lived the Osho experiment. You were one of the pioneers in this movement of creating a new man, Zorba the Buddha. What does it mean to you personally to be with Osho today in 2018?
Okay, I don't think I was one of the pioneers. The first 10, 15 years, I was only a very ordinary part of the community, and I was mainly working on myself and meditation. So now I forgot your question.
No problem. So what does it mean to you to be with Osho today in 2018?
Okay. It means to bring awareness, silence, and also presence into my daily life with people that are part of my daily life. Very ordinary people, like I sense my Sangha is the people that are around me in my daily life, here in our village and wherever I go, to be the presence and most of all never fall into the trap of thinking I'm special because I'm on a spiritual journey. So to be ordinary, to be sincere, this is very, very important to me, and to bring presence into being with people.
Thank you so much, Wittmann. So that's the end of our show. And I want to thank you so much for connecting with me, for sharing the work you do, which I think it's absolutely incredible and it's so valuable. And I wish that you, the work you do, the people who train with you, and perhaps even from other traditions, but I really wish that we start as a society, more and more people, we start facing the theme of death more and more, and we all become more conscious about death, because it's unavoidable. One day or another, it will come. Thank you so much for what you're doing and for sharing your love for Osho.
Yes, thank you. Thank you to you too, Sharam. While we were speaking, I noticed that my heart opened more and more, and I'm so deeply grateful that, and that's what we all do, that we can bring something, share something of Osho, of his presence, of his message into this world, which needs it so very much. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Hi, Bo.
Well, I feel touched now by what you just said, and it's, in my experience, at the beginning of the podcast, it's always a little bit like this, and then slowly as we start entering, I feel like Osho's energy is coming and heart opens, and it's so wonderful. And so I really want to thank you even more now. So sending you lots of love and a big hug, and I hope to meet you in person one day.
Yes, I would love to meet you in person. I would love to meet you in person. And thank you. Namaste. Be well.
Namaste. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Love Osho podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, you can show your appreciation by leaving a review on iTunes. Visit loveosho.com for new episodes, blogs, and much more.